Welcome to Notes from the Western Edge, a monthly half-hour on-demand webcast featuring musicians who create on the edges of jazz, new music, electronics, and a broad expanse of sonic spaces in between. This month, we feature musicians from two very different quartets, Kronos and the World Saxophone Quartet. For David Harrington, 1973 was a very important year. First, he went to a film featuring the radical political writer I.F. Stone. Then later, he heard George Crumb's Black Angels on the radio. Tune in and hear how he put these two experiences together to form Kronos. Since then, string quartets have never been the same. When he was 8 or 9, Hammett Blewett first saw a big, shiny baritone saxophone and knew that's what he wanted to play. It'd be a while before that could happen, but once he started to play the Barry, he took it to places it had never been before. One more thing, his name is not pronounced Hammett Blewett. Listen to how he says it. I hope you enjoy the show.
I don't even think of myself as a violinist. The reason I take my violin out of my case is to be able to play in this group.
The group David Harrington's talking about is Kronos, the string quartet that's done more than any other contemporary music ensemble to drag classical music audiences, some kicking and screaming, others cheering wildly, into the 21st century. Made up of Harrington and John Sherba on violins, Hank Dutt on viola, and Jeffrey Ziegler on cello, Kronos is on the road 5 months of each year, playing concerts and festivals around the world. I had asked Harrington if besides playing with Kronos, he does solo gigs or plays with other ensembles. His answer was a definitive no. For Harrington, since the summer of 73, Kronos has been it.
Well, in the summer of 1973, two major events happened for me. One was that I went to a film called I.F. Stone's Weekly, and I was totally moved by what this one man was doing and what he was able to accomplish by being incredibly single-minded and basically investigating our government and what our leaders were saying. One of his great quotes is, "All governments lie."
That first event was obviously political. The second was musical.
The second event, about a month later, was that on the radio, I heard George Crumb's Black Angels. And that really changed my whole life, because earlier, and I'm sure I was not alone, but I was trying to find the sound that felt right to be a part of. And you have to remember, this was during the Vietnam time. And many people my age were searching for ways of expressing their dissatisfaction with this war. And the music that I had grown up playing just wasn't doing it for me. And so inside there was a great big silence. And when I heard Black Angels, all of a sudden that silence was released. And the amazing imagination of the sound of Black Angels and the incredible vibrancy of inspiration of that piece in a way gave me a voice. And I realized I have to play that piece. And in order to play that piece, I had to start a group. And so a couple of weeks later, in Seattle, Washington, Kronos started.
From Mr. George Crumb to Mr. Jimi Hendrix. When Kronos came on the scene, classical music ensembles didn't play music by rock musicians like Jimi Hendrix. It just wasn't done. Today, most classical ensembles have at least some contemporary music from the pop side in their music folders. For Kronos, the trip to Hendrix started in the late 1970s with Harrington's love of Stravinsky and the seemingly unrelated observation that symphony orchestras seemed to be going bankrupt left and right. Then he was struck by what was for him a troubling realization.
I have never played The Rite of Spring by Stravinsky. And for me, I remember, you know, the exact place I was in when I was 16 years old when I first heard that piece. It's one of those experiences that doesn't easily leave you. And I realized I really want to play that, The Rite of Spring. And I was thinking, okay, well, you know, I'm in Kronos. I'm never going to be in an orchestra. And even if I could be in an orchestra, they're all going to economically collapse, and so there won't be such things anymore. So this music, you know, we need to find a new way to play this music. So I asked a friend to make a new version for Kronos. And eventually, in about 1979, we played The Rite of Spring for Kronos and piano. But as we were preparing The Rite of Spring, I realized, well, what if the audience wanted an encore? What could we possibly do after The Rite of Spring? And I was thinking about this and thinking, and I realized the only thing that makes any sense to me is Purple Haze by Jimi Hendrix.
It would be impossible to convey the sheer magnitude of music Kronos has performed and recorded in this short profile of David Harrington. If I started to list all of the composers they've covered, I'd be talking all day and all night. So I'll just list a few of my favorites and let you check out the rest on their website at kronosquartet.org. Let's start with Terry Riley. Terry Riley was teaching at Mills College in Oakland, California in the 1970s when he first met David Harrington. Since then, he's composed 13 string quartets for Kronos, in addition to a few other pieces that include a string quartet within a larger musical group. In 2002, he was commissioned by NASA to compose Sun Rings for string quartet, choir, and sounds recorded in space. Right now, we're listening to Half Wolf Dance's Mad in Moonlight from 1985's Salome Dances for Peace in a recording on the Nonesuch label. In 1988, the photographer, philanthropist, and patron of new music, Betty Freeman, commissioned Steve Reich to compose different trains for Kronos. This piece reflects a period in Reich's life when, as a child, he rode trains back and forth between New York and Los Angeles, passing through Chicago. To create the music we're hearing, Reich combined voice recordings of his former governess who rode the trains with him, a retired Pullman porter, and three Holocaust survivors, with recordings of train sounds and four separate recordings of Kronos. He writes that the piece presents both a documentary and a musical reality, and that had he lived in Europe during those years, 1939 to 1942, as a Jew he might have been riding on very different trains. This is the first movement, America Before the War. When I asked Harrington if he's the leader of Kronos, he said no, but then he went on.
My role for the last 33 years has been as talent scout, you could say, or artistic director or something like that, where you know, I'm constantly checking out new composers, new experiences that we might be able to be a part of. And I've had a lot of faith put into my explorations by the other members of Kronos. And we've had a lot of fun so far. And there's so many ideas for the future. It's shocking. Music, the way it's flourishing right now and how many aspects of life it seems to be incorporating. It's a wonderful time to be a musician, to be a listener, to be able to be a part of the world of music.
Crack train from New York. Crack train from New York. Crack train from New York.
It's very unfortunate that the great ideals that have made our republic a shining light of history,
Scott Johnson's Cold War suite from How It Happens, The Voice of I.F. Stone, brings us back to that film Harrington saw in the summer of 1973 before putting together the group that would become Kronos. This recording is from the Nonesuch CD Howl USA, which also includes Michael Dougherty's Sing Sing, J. Edgar Hoover, and Lee Hyla's Howl, which Kronos recorded with Allen Ginsberg reading his poem of the same name.
That made us look like a bunch of hypocrites.
Kronos has performed film music over the years by Philip Glass and Howard Shore, and even performed a version of The Day the Earth Stood Still by Bernard Herrmann. Most recently, they've recorded Clint Mansell's music for the Darren Aronofsky films Requiem for a Dream and The Fountain. Here they're playing music by Bollywood composer R.D. Burman with vocals by Asha Bhosle. The tune, Take Another Toke. We'll close with a sentimental favorite of mine, the title track from the 1988 Nonesuch release, Winter Was Hard, composed by Aulis Salonen. Back in the 1990s, when I would broadcast this piece on KFAI radio on cold, wintry Minneapolis nights, it brought much warmth to me, and hopefully to my listeners. For that, and for all the great music you've brought to the world, thank you, Kronos. And thank you, David Harrington. In Los Angeles, for Notes from the Western Edge, I'm Richard Paskey.
You just call me Blewett. But my first name is Hammett, but I don't use it that much anymore.
Many of us have musical memories we'll never forget. One of mine is of the Sam Rivers Big Band at Orchestra Hall in Minneapolis in the 1980s. That evening, Rivers led a stellar ensemble with some of the best players around. Bassists Rufus Reed and Dave Holland, drummer Michael Carvin, and besides himself on tenor saxophone, Chico Freeman. Each of them performed powerful solos, but none more so than Hammett Blewett on baritone saxophone. Let me set the stage for you. Built in 1974, Orchestra Hall's very modern interior features more than 100 huge white cubes protruding from the ceiling, and most prominently, from the back wall of the stage. These massive falling rocks serve to diffuse the sound throughout the room like the florid decorative elements found in European concert halls of old. Man, did Blewett take advantage of those acoustics that night. Dressed in a pure white suit, he took his unaccompanied solo by purposefully walking the perimeter of the stage, honking and screeching on a step or two, and then listening like a tone scientist to the sound reverberate in the cavernous space. The combined oral and visual effect was both musically and socio-politically profound. Here was an African-American jazz musician from Lovejoy, Illinois, bringing his music into one of the bastions of Euro-American culture in a way that said, in the words of Jesse Jackson, "I am somebody." Interestingly, one of Jackson's advisors has said that on long airplane trips, Jackson would listen to jazz on a set of headphones and come up with lines for his speeches in a process he called Jacksonizing. But Blewett does a lot more than honk and screech. Listening to Blewett and pianist Larry Willis play Thelonious Monk's Ask Me Now from their 1999 CD, If Trees Could Talk, on the Mapleshade label. Before that, we heard Blewett with Asante on percussion on The African from the same CD. I asked Blewett why he chose to play the baritone saxophone.
I saw a baritone when I was about maybe 9, 8, I don't remember. I had always wanted to play saxophone, so it was just like love at first sight. It took me to get to about 18, I guess, before I finally got to one. But that's the one I wanted to play. I never wanted to play alto or tenor or anything else. I just liked the way it looked.
As he said, it would be a while before Blewett and the Berry got together.
Because at the time, I come from a small village, so there were no more saxophones, so they put me on clarinet. The saxophone was already been taken. One of the three. As a foundation for the Reed family, so I played that until I finally got a baritone. I was about 18, I think, something like that.
As a musician with a long-time commitment to the baritone saxophone, Blewett has some criticism to offer to both Reed players who might occasionally double on Barry, and to some composers.
Most people play the horn, don't take the time to really play it. They need a job for somebody playing baritone, they pull it out the drawer and go make the job. But they never really investigate to find out what it really does. What it really does is totally different from what everybody writes for. They write for it like it's a violin, not a violin, a cello. Not every chance to write for like it's a violin, all kinds of stuff. But not a saxophone. And not a baritone saxophone, it's a different voice. It's not a trombone. I mean, you can make it do, you know, because most of the stuff is coming off a pianistic concept. I mean, you know, the horn can play out of tune, in tune, a lot of different things that a fixed instrument can't do, so it's kind of unfair to look at it that way. It's a baritone, it's not a bass. It's used a lot of functions as a bass where it's really a baritone. So the power of the sound is not really, it's not in its power zone, in its powerhouse, just in terms of how music is.
All of the music we've heard so far was recorded at Mapleshade Studio, which is housed in a century-old plantation-style mansion in Upper Marlboro, Maryland. Here Blewett switches to alto flute in a free improvisation titled If Trees Could Talk, after the opening lines of a Washington Post interview with him conducted by Marianne French. If trees could talk, they could tell us how human life is captured, controlled, possessed. They've seen it all. Later in that interview, Blewett talked about the conflict he felt as an African-American recording on the site of a former tobacco plantation with its historical connections to slavery. On Runaway, the last piece on the album, Blewett plays it like it is, outside, on the front porch of the mansion.
Thank you.
Blewett is perhaps best known for co-founding the World Saxophone Quartet in 1976 with David Murray, Oliver Lake, and the late Julius Hemphill. Here on a Just in Time recording, he provides the foundation for an arrangement of the Jimi Hendrix version of Hey Joe. I asked him how the World Saxophone Quartet came to be.
We started out mainly as an extension of what was going on in the loft in the yard. I mean, the developer, though. Because we didn't have no engineers or A&R man. Or somebody sitting around telling you, well, that's where that's the bottom line, or that's what, you know, all that kind of talk, whatever it is, about what you should do, what you got to do. So just, you know, it's kind of just doing what we as musicians do. So the group was formed that way. So it's a good way to be formed.
At the time, their approach was unique.
And we knew how to play without a rhythm section. So that's the main sort of invention, if you want to call it that, that we came up with. You know, of having a rhythm section in this group that could really had a pulsation that could swing to everything. You didn't miss that. It was a whole band. So, but in order to do that, we had to lose all this other way of thinking. You know, come up with something new and different. And let the saxophone be a saxophone.
While still letting saxophones be saxophones, in recent years the quartet has sometimes expanded into a larger group. On this year's Political Blues, the change is apparent. Childhood in 1940s Lovejoy, Illinois, to co-founding the Black Artist Group in 1968 in St. Louis, to his work in New York City and beyond, Blewett has always blazed his own path.
In my lifetime, I'm doing what I do and not following everybody else. So I feel real good about my accomplishments. You know, I don't have an accomplishment because somebody else did it and I followed them. Not really. I mean, no one is the first, but I didn't clone anyone or whatever, you know. The instrument wouldn't let me do that. That's another reason why I picked it. I knew I'd have to go my own way.
In Los Angeles, for Notes from the Western Edge, I'm Richard Paskey.
I've got political blues, sick of hearing it every day. I've got the
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the show. Next month, tune in for some surprises, and maybe more. In Los Angeles, for Notes from the Western Edge and Fresh Ears Media, I'm Richard Paskey. Until next time, keep listening.